order, regular meeting, North End Planning Commission, Thursday, September 27, 2012, City Hall. Agenda, minutes from August 23, 2012, Planning Commission meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. Any questions, comments, changes? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Public comment on non-agenda items. Larry, non-agenda items?
Larry Costello, 13405, 2475. The commission committee would like to offer a few comments for 13 minutes on the sustainability graph. I'm able to stay from the balance of the meeting. So if you would allow me just a few minutes to offer some, we appreciate that.
Unless there's objection.
Very well. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. First of all, I want to recognize Mike. I think this most recent draft is a very good improvement in the first version, so I do commend the efforts on that. I have a few general issues that I think work through the revision. I still have, and would like to express a basic concern about referring to the international political movement as the companions of this chapter by referencing the Development Commission and the corresponding report. I think we are recognizing that as important part of this draft, and I do find that a concern. I would encourage us to, I think, identify with the good aspects of environmental stewardship by promoting what I would refer to as enduring prosperity as the alternative to referencing the Development Report. I think we can achieve all of these objectives without going to that international political standard, which I think is highly debated and is a very charged issue. So,
Can I ask, because I've actually contemplated your, that was kind of your opening comments when we began, and I've thought about that a few times, and I have yet to understand what your objection is, because really all that's being said here is here's the definition, so you don't believe this is a correct definition for sustainability?
I think that definition is sourced from the Upon the Future Report, which is the Upon the Future Report that was published in 1987. The chair of that commission was Bill Harvey Brown. She's the vice president of the World Socialist Party. I just find
can I ask, what's her political affiliation have to do with this definition?
Well, if you were to research the political affiliation of all the members that are on that commission, you'll find that they strongly align with the socialist principles and don't advocate and embrace the principles that underpin our country. Free markets, constitutional limited government, private enterprise, self-reliance, things of that nature. There's quite an admonishment that's built into the doctrine that's promoted through the Brundtland Report that basically chastises the United States and is calling for a significant realignment of our country's basic principles. So I think that there's, I
hear you, but what in this definition, which is the only thing being referenced here, are you calling socialists? I'm not following the connection.
Well, the connection is the source of where that statement comes from. And we can also perhaps dissect that statement itself. I think it's a rather lofty statement in the sense that we're trying to give ourselves sufficient credit to be able to predict what future generations are going to need to sustain themselves. I don't think anybody has the ability to read that kind of a crystal ball. Therefore, I think that the statement, although it sounds nice, I think it's got a false premise built into it. And we're trying to build policy around that statement. The concept of enduring prosperity, I think, basically pursues the same objectives, but I think we can build alignment that's more closely, is more true to the fundamental principles of the United States doctrine, not an international United Nations doctrine.
And I apologize, I did interrupt you because you were suggesting an alternative.
Well, the alternative, again, would be this. Boil it down to the two words, enduring prosperity. If you want to pursue something called sustainability, I would ask us to consider that. When you think about what those two words really mean, enduring prosperity, that suggests a perpetuity, and I think that the term prosperity is really at the heart of what we would like to see in the context of sustainable environment and a sustainable community. I think it allows us to bring in some of the other elements that I've advocated for, which is these concepts of private property rights and free enterprise and allowing individuals to use their unalienable rights in the manner that they best see fit in order to create wealth. I think that these are very important aspects of this concept of individual prosperity. At the same time, there's certainly an important point of doing all of these things while respecting our environment and those other community members around us. So again, I'm not saying that these things are fundamentally wrong in terms of these objectives that we're trying to meet. I just think that we're being wrapped into this globalist movement that has come out of this Common Future Report from 1987, and I don't know that it's something that we have to do. Why follow what others are doing? I think we're meant to be unique, distinguish itself from other communities, be a leader in this. We're not abandoning any of these fine values of responsible environmental stewardship, but we can package it in a different form. These are cut and paste. The three equity, economic, and ecology, that's all cut and paste. I don't know, Mike, and please don't misunderstand, I'm not criticizing here, but did you originate that? I'm assuming that was something that you either have from some...
It is something that I read elsewhere and resonated with me, and it seemed good principles to follow. Yeah. And so it did wind up coming into the element, but I did not realize the source, I did not know the source, and I still don't think that the source matters in that the principles themselves stand on their own merits.
Well, and this is also, this is a city document that Mike is working within a number of people that are helping suggest it. And the information that, like the three pillars is something that is discussed through planning realms all over the nation, not just worldwide. These are principles and practices that are...
In fact, they're the three principles of which I spent 5 years on my undergraduate work. So
yeah.
This is not something, as you're saying,
this is
not new.
No, it's not new.
This
at
is
all.
Actually very accepted, common pulling together of all the things that impact. Recognition that there is a natural world as well as the human world. So I like it. I think it makes sense.
Obviously, we're certainly all entitled to our opinions and appreciate the opportunity to express mine. And hopefully, I'll be able to have some influence and persuasion with the commission here on the council. I still have a few others.
Just on the quickly on the Brundtland Commission, if the concern is the reference to Brundtland Commission, if that creates some kind of political thought or tie, there's no copyright on that statement. So we could just simply reference it as sustainability is widely recognized as the following definition. Divorce the definition from its source. We were just citing the source, but we don't necessarily have to.
Why don't we say sustainability is widely recognized as a form of prosperity?
Because it's more than that, yeah.
Why? How is it more than that?
The
definition is, in effect, nothing more than trying to say a form of prosperity, but I would argue in more of a negative way rather than a positive way. It's a constraining look. It's saying limiting what this generation does to read the crystal ball and try to predict using precautionary principle type techniques to ensure that something...
How is it limiting? What is it? What is that statement? What is that statement limiting you from?
The statement is suggesting that we in this generation are going to constrain and control ourselves in some manner to ensure that the future generations are able to do something that we have no idea what it is.
Or it could be the exact opposite. It could be that we're going to initiate innovation to meet our existing needs and future needs, which is the whole premise of what the United States has been built on, is innovation. So to me, it actually inspires versus restricts.
I'm restrictive. So not a restricted statement.
I don't want to interrupt your train, because I'm all over what you're saying. If it smells of something, it's attached to something, that probably is that thing you smell. So I'm good there. And all through this, and I've got circles of notes, I'm just kind of listening to see what it's saying. But I think it is, in the planning community, the culture of planning for cities. And I'm no expert, I'm just listening to different commissions that I've sat on and listening to how city councils and how those people think as a group. In order to get funding for the system that they have in the city, in the county, in the, whatever the state may be, there's always a tie back to the funding source. And they're always looking for ways to make sure they're fitting inside the box so that they don't give up a future opportunity to get funding for grants. So in my mind, as I read through this, and there are lots of other documents like it, the culture to make sure we get tied to the money that the government source makes us all start following rules we might not otherwise follow. And this report that was briefed in the 80s and probably 20 years before that, as it evolved, is that culture. And so I'm standing on needles here too, thinking, do we continue to sign up for that program, drink the Kool-Aid, without anybody saying anything, because it came from on high and we got to follow the rules. So I'm listening. Can you interrupt?
No, I'm
not the only one thinking that.
You did a much better job of articulating the things from the concept that you really have different motivations, so thank you very much. I really agree with what you're saying. Our time is limited here, so again, then in section A, that's where several of these comments really are directed. And I'm not bringing chapter and verse to this. One of the other items I guess I would ask is that in the general question that I have raised with you, why is this chapter even necessary? My understanding is that Resolution 1532 was passed last summer included policy in the attachment to that resolution that effectively satisfied the public trust grant application process. So by and large, the need to chase the money is already met. So it would appear that this effort is over and beyond. I've spoken before of this overreach because in my mind, when government overreaches, that also contributes to the problem of sustainability in the context of the permanent definition. That is, I think, one of the biggest challenges our society faces right now is this largesse of government. So I would encourage us to be minimalist in this policy document, since we've met public or trust fund grant application protocol. And we've come a long way, Mike. This has come down a lot, and applied your efforts in this. But I would still ask us to look harder. Can we do more? Section 8.3, we refer to statewide greenhouse gas reduction limits. These aren't directed to cities, so why are we even representing those in this document? The green building requirement is not directed at cities. Why are we needing to include that in this document? Similarly, in 8.3, the electric and biofuel operations, these rules, they haven't been defined yet, so it seems like we might be wanting to pre-invest in policy before we even know what the ground rules are. We still have several years out front of us before these come to a sharper focus. It seems like we might be spinning our wheels here with a pre-investment policy. On section B, labeled as unalienable rights and private property, I was very encouraged to see that language that you added, Mike. I think that was reflective of some language I had suggested earlier. I really appreciated that. I would still think that it could be strengthened further. A strong private property rights advocate, because that's an unalienable right, I would want to see it recognized as a superior standard, something that cannot subordinate to public policy. And Rob, I saw that you would offer some comments. I would disagree with your edits, Rob. I think it's taken away from a very important aspect. And since this is the first recognition of private property in the entire comprehensive
to your comment, Rob, the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution addresses private property rights in Article 1, Section 1 and 3 of the Washington State Constitution. And the Federalist Papers, the 20 series, 30 series, and 50 series are very good resources if you wanted to look at history.
I actually reread the Constitution before I wrote my comments, so I'm pretty familiar with what the Constitution says, which is what's being cited.
Section D, I would request that, again, we still have some references to what I'm going to call scientific fact. I would question that CO2 is not the dominant greenhouse gas, it's certainly not an agreed upon statement. And I think we still have maybe some carryovers. I know we wanted to stay away from the climate change debate. I would encourage us to eliminate any more of that. I think it's just too contentious. There's too many experts on both sides of this would argue otherwise, and I don't know why it's necessarily relevant to what we're trying to accomplish. So I would encourage this to step away from those guys. On Section E, the sustainable economy statement, just in general, I think we should look at trying to include in how the government itself is an important cog in the sustainability wheel. And I referred to government largesse. And the whole sustainability concept, if you read our common future, which I spent some time going through it, there's no reference at all in identifying or acknowledging the government, the growth of government, and how it is maintained, its dependency on the private sector wealth creation, how that itself is probably the biggest offender and biggest challenge in this whole model of sustainability. I think it's important that we include some of that identification in this policy because, again, it's an important cause in that way. Section G, the fossil fuel industry, there's still, I think, somewhat of a tone of admonishment here. I don't have any connection with the fossil fuel industry. I don't have any stake in it other than to recognize that of all the industries that man has created, it has probably been for good for our way of life, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world. Certainly it has problems, and the problems can be worked on. But I would offer that we try to identify policy that encourages us to perfect these resources as opposed to turn our backs on them, because we are so critical to our ability to provide energy. And none of the developing alternative fuels for many more years to come can be able to replace this. And we have tremendous resources at our disposal, and it's important that we not scare ourselves away from using them. Then general comments, sections F through J. I would encourage us to have policy statements that restrict government's intervention in the food market. So I think my basic comment here is to avoid artificially propping up programs and technology that may not otherwise be economically viable on its own by using incentives. And I view that as a misuse of taxpayer money and private capital. So I would ask us to look at that very carefully and how we're choosing and forming the words for those sections. And then lastly, as I had previously submitted on my earlier comments, I think that we could delete sections L, M, N, and O altogether, primarily because I think other of our comprehensive planning documents touch on some of these perhaps in more depth already. And since these are not directly a requirement for meeting the RCW 7235, subchapter 070, and the resolution 1532, it strikes me as, again, we've gone into that overreach mode, and I would request that there is to step away. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate your comments.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you.
Okay, so we want to go back to the start of the document and start down through. Or did you want to?
I also have paper copies if anybody wants to take them for looking at it that way, Rob's edits. Anybody wants that, or can just view it on the screen here.
Pretty good.
So thank you very much. I think your comments were very well said and helpful for getting us to a clear document. thank you also for emailing them ahead of time. It makes it so much more efficient for us to look at. And
you're welcome. It was pretty easy with the document you presented. And that's what I meant in my comment. I could not have offered what I did from what we had before. So, I mean, you know, again, right back at you, because this is what you put back together and pulled it together so well.
It's a team effort.
So, well, yes.
Mine's a
team. Understand, yeah, there's a marshal in charge.
No,
yeah.
So your first comment on tollgate, that's fine. I think when I was thinking about it, I was thinking of Meadowbrook just because of the size and scale.
Yeah.
But either way, it's fine.
To me, we're used to talking about Meadowbrook, it was, but we're talking about North Bend, and we own tollgate, whereas it's a shared ownership for Meadowbrook and Esper. So that was my own thinking, whichever way it went.
So both would be appropriate.
And we could certainly,
nice
both, and certainly both, yeah, could be very appropriate. Yeah.
Okay.
Does Wyoming have an issue with the development of the soccer fields and baseball fields?
It's based on
those comments all agree. I'm just going to change the wordage on this a little bit, but not change the context. The balance of environmental, community, economic goals. Is that right?
Philosophical point, but it's huge. The social equity piece of this puzzle, that's where he's coming from. And I buy into that all the way, because anytime anybody starts trying to balance social equity, where are we headed with that? Somebody's got to decide what's equal, somebody's got to decide what's not, and somebody's got to come in and fix it. So, that's one of the roots of socialism, to throw us strong.
I wouldn't say it's socialism. It means that when you're making decisions, you're considering how is this impacting certain populations or individuals. So if we're going to create a new wastewater treatment plant, are we thinking about, is it just easy to stick it next to the trailer park because they're less likely to complain? Or are we thinking about how are we minimizing impacts to anyone, regardless of who?
I say you're welcome to put it next to the trailer park. You just need to buy the trailer next to the land you're talking about. Screwing.
Yeah, that gets back to equity.
So Jim, be sure I'm following. You're really just focused on the social equity phrase in the last sentence.
Well, because it floats through the whole thing we're talking about here.
Right.
The three pillars, that's one of the three pillars. And my instinct is that does not belong in this conversation, because you're talking about a perspective that the government planning folks really can't have if they wanted to. Because in your example, you're making an assumption. You know what each of the trailer park owners, their units, whatever it is you're speaking of, you have some knowledge of what's good for them and what's not good for them.
I guess, that's a good point. I guess when I look at, and I guess it's what does each of these pillars, represent for us, and to me, there's let's see, what would it be? Social equity. I'm trying to think of a different terminology, how I would define what that's getting at, but it's the balance between. It's not And regardless of what some may want to say, you know, my training and literal college training in principles of government politics in this country is not that we are not a totally free market system, right? We have protections throughout our system to ensure that whether it be a corporation or whatever business entity does not run you know, the individual over the ground. So it is a balance. And so to me, and so maybe there's another way that we need to get at that principle, but what I'm looking at is the recognition of the need for the economic power that those fundamental economic levers that create the wealth and prosperity and the advancement, the innovation, the technology that we're all benefiting from. It is the recognition of we are still living, breathing beings on a finite entity, and therefore recognition of the environment is critical to our long-term success, and yes, sustainability in my mind is indeed what we're talking about, how to survive for eons. It is those two things that then, to me, need to be balanced with the individual, with the society at large, and so maybe social equity is not quite the right term. But I think those, to me, I'm trying to express that those are the right three chunks, the right three legs of a stool to keep us going.
I think also liberty and personal freedoms are within that social factor. So
that's the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, basically.
So I think when you come back to some of Larry's ideas about not restricting individual freedoms and protecting property rights, that's the part that fits in that social sphere.
Yeah, I would.
You know, the one thing that I think we really need to think about as we read this is we could be just as concerned with, can you go back to the way it's economic vitality, social equity, and environmental quality, right? So we're worried about social equity because somehow that means we're going to subsidize somebody over here so they can have equality when in reality they should hold their own, okay? But we could make those same arguments for the environment or what have you. So it isn't so much that just because it's called social equity, it means all of a sudden the next eight policies in that area are going to relate to a socialist approach. But what it means is if we're planning a city, okay, we want to plan for our kids graduating from college, starting their life, where do they live? They can't buy a house yet, but we want to have that part of our society here. We also have to plan for our retired and even our elderly, and we need to have areas for those people. And how do we do that doesn't always mean, and this is where I feel in government you hear a lot of fear factor about, well, the government's talking social equity, so that means all of a sudden we're going to have subsidized housing and this and that. But in reality, we, as a society, have to think about, we're going to have poor people, we're going to have young people, old people, we're going to have wealthy people. And how do we balance all that so the culmination of them bouncing off each other project us to a successful society? Well,
I'll say it in a little different way than what you're kind of describing, because you're basically describing the makeup of the town, the makeup of the community, and it is the things that we're looking at are the things that are fundamental to having a vibrant, sustainable community.
Right.
We need to have room that is set aside for industrial production. We need to have room that is set aside for commercial enterprise. And we need to have room that is set aside for single-family housing, multi-family housing,
parks,
recreation areas.
I don't disagree with any of that. I think there's two points I'd make. One, I think those things happen when you focus and protect economic viability across the board, because economics will take care of most of of that piece of the puzzle. People like to live next to a park. People want to build their companies in the hometown where they live. So those are, those to me are economic issues. They're not, and I appreciate your point, and maybe it's just the words, just Eric does that to me when I read it. There's a lot of stuff that sits back there in my head that maybe doesn't apply here. I own that, but there's lots of people that probably have the same issue. So anytime you put social equity into a conversation that involves any government or bureaucratic body, it's a freak show. Because nobody in that large of an institution really is going to have a tune in to what social equity really is.
Certainly not from an
individual's perspective.
I disagree with that. I mean, you're talking to two individuals that are in that arena. When you look at our history of our country, we have had some mishaps with equity, so from a social standpoint. So there is a sense of you do have to think about it, because it might not be something that the Western Washington has been faced with so much, but it's still pretty predominantly, you know, there's still issues that crop up nationwide that, you know, we don't necessarily, we don't.
We face it as a nation. Jim, I certainly don't think this is your illusion, but I do believe this is very much the line that Larry is pushing, and one I certainly hear a lot. But I reject the notion that the use of the term social means socialism in the political movement sense.
Well, I understand.
You know, that is
what it sounds like. To somebody who's not studying, that's what I'm about to say to you.
Yeah.
It's if I have been talking about drugs, and I start talking about efficacy of a drug, people that don't deal with it every day go, what the hell does that mean?
Would they
work or not?
Would the term equality give a better connotation?
Well,
no, because you cannot have a sense of what's equal in someone else's mind. Can't go there.
I think what this is in my mind, this is saying is, you know, you can't really have true economic vitality without somewhat of a social stability. It's like a family bond. Families that support each other, their kids are wealthier, and it doesn't mean that the dad, it doesn't mean mom and dad are handing them money. Yeah. It means mom and dad are saying, you know what, here's the keys, here's the tools to be a successful, whatever, human, and they march forward. Well, with the support of, you know, that family unit, that's how communities.
Social, you said it.
Sustainable.
Equality.
No. I have to go back and play the tape back to ourselves from 30 seconds ago.
Stability. Yes, social stability. And I don't.
Stability is very
important. I don't want to get caught in the language. I don't want to get caught in the language, but the piece that I came here tonight after reading through all of this, and I read all your comments, I'm like, totally, that makes sense. The wordsmithing, cleaning up, tightening up, all that's good stuff. But the overarching piece of this that I came here with a sense in my gut about is this is one more document that has lots of stuff in it that will control what an individual wants to do with his property.
No, I completely disagree with that statement in the way that we've written the document. There's nothing in here that says we are requiring or we are going to require. It's the entire thing with our vision is all incentive-based.
We would never fly if it was a requirement. I get that. And I know we've softened it up by saying we're going to have some incentives instead of mandate things. I get that. But the flavor, the language, has a lot of that going on.
You know, when we go through that, because that's one thing that Larry, I really want to understand, like one of the areas he pointed out, and so I'm kind of saying, I want to understand this from you too. Deeply understand this, because it helps us, right, but he pointed out, I think, 8.3 on page 10, and it says, identify and remove regulatory and procedural barriers to implementing green building practice, such as updating codes, guidelines, zoning, and ensure that the plan review and building inspection staff are trained in green building practices, blah, blah, blah. So I'm thinking, how does that, you know, I was trying to really understand where how that was offensive, because what that tells me is I'm holding my government staff to a educational level that should be expected. So in a way, to me, so as we go through the document, maybe if there's areas you could really articulate what it is that bothers you about the statement. Because then we can kind of get into the nuts and bolts.
Well, you know, the more I think about what some of the things that Larry was commenting on in three pillars of sustainability, I don't know, to me, I almost feel like there needs to be a fourth pillar of individual liberty. And that maybe is the missing component that...
property rights.
Yeah, which really would be embodied in that.
Yeah. And that's where he's coming from. When I hear it in speech, it's kind of like certain folks in the population across the country. And it's almost a generational thing, I'd say. There's a lot of energy, a certain generational step. It's kind of like they grew up in a time when you could build your deck out and over the stream because the stream was on your property. No more capable house or you could see the stream. You could walk across your property and not think twice about maybe you stepped on some kind of wildlife or protected species. So there's been this trend throughout the country that relates to property rights, all tied to environmental protection, energy. This is the new twist where we're focused on fossil fuels instead of spotted owls. But it all comes down to I can do less with this chunk of 10 acres that I bought or my grandfather bought. My use of it has been infringed regularly by government regulation.
I'm sorry, but can I just go for a second? So yeah. I'm going to go for just personal experience, you know, because my dad lived on a lake, and you would see these guys with their lawnmowers, and what they do is they dump their used oil in the lawn. What that does is seep down and into the lake, and that's why people can't live by lakes, because the people who own their properties aren't always responsible. And who ultimately pays the price is the society who lives around that body of water. So it's up to somebody to take charge, and who's big enough and who has the rights overall is the government to come in and put in force code enforcement that protects that body of water for future generations.
Or protecting the rights of the others. And that's the other thing, it's protecting the rights that you have as the neighbor.
I get that.
Yeah.
And so when he's talking in Section A, he was talking about future generations' needs, but it's about their basic needs of clean air and clean water. And when we're talking about how we can go about ensuring that through better building programs, through responsible city government, I don't get most of his objections without any evidence.
To get into specific objections, I just try to throw a couple out.
Yeah.
I think that the people push back to all of those things. You're using your story, right? It's a great example. Some dumbass was pouring plumber oil right into the river, right into the lake. Got it. Dumb. I guess they wouldn't do that today because now they know better.
Or there's a hotline call.
They still do.
We could probably argue about it for a long time. Back then, the mindset was, you're not hurting anything. If they knew that they really were hurting in something, most of those stories wouldn't have ever happened. Because the next door neighbor would say, hey, dumbass.
It's just the reality of an urbanizing society.
I think it goes to the fundamental of the balance between the two. I'll use the different example. Throughout the country, throughout the world, throughout the state, in agricultural practice, we use a lot of petroleum-based chemicals. Very well, the potential for environmental damage to our watersheds, to our drinking water, and various things, to our public health, they can provide. The farmer who is using them is quite aware of it, and sometimes, unfortunately, are the most impacted by that. But somewhere is the balance between the way that we want to be sure that we can provide the amounts of foodstuffs that we want, and so it is the government representing society at large, which is striking the balance between finding ways for
us to grow food using those synthetic chemicals, yet trying to ameliorate their impact on society at large. That's what this three pillars says to me. I don't think we're missing anything. I actually disagree with the idea that we're missing individual rights. I think it's well represented within society and economics.
Just one extra thought on it too, though, is that it's not a government that's imposing these things. We don't have a central planning agency in our country like China or whatever, but it's government by the people. So these decisions are made in the public realm by the public.
It's just a changing this room today.
Yeah, and that's actually exactly why I have another notch of energy. It's like, wait, this is where it should be at. This is the place to have a conversation.
Absolutely.
This is a great conversation.
To King County Council meeting and complaining about the CAO. All that stuff is kind of already happened.
So I guess, and I'll preface with this, I actually want to back up screen in a moment, but to get it, and if we're at kind of that point. So in the pillars feeling and in the phrase being used, are you feeling that you wanted to eliminate the pillar or eliminate the concept, change of phrase? Is there something specifically you think would help?
I have a way to blow up what we're looking at.
Sure. And Rob, I agree we can get rid of the little doohickeys.
Well, I want to show you the doohickey. It's got my attention. It's this top little square box.
Yeah. Social. Or the thing
about the square box. Where there's a guy on top of the building and another guy on top of the building. What does that symbolize to you?
And there's guys lifting up that guy.
Helping out somebody that is in a worse off situation to
make it improve to the guy who doesn't need the help.
No, we're not talking about wealth redistribution here.
I'm telling you, that's what that says to me.
Well, if for no other reason, it's a reason to strike the image.
Yeah.
My personal on all of them, it was like I don't need a leafy tree to tell me that I'm reading environment. I didn't need a smokestack to tell me economics. In fact, that's the one I objected to. Was the smokestacks. To me, that's not economics.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So I it's good, Jim, that you looked at it that close. I didn't even pay attention. What I saw was buildings, and I thought, what do these buildings with people have to do with this?
I can't believe them right now, but I'll figure
it
out.
Yeah.
I think you have three nice columns, Mike.
What's that?
If you do a search for images for the three pillars of sustainability, there's nice Roman pillars.
I agree with simplicity. Just keep it as the spheres. And
I like the interlock, and to the opposite side of that, I like the interlocking circles and the notion that it is all tied together. It is the balance between the environment, between the economic gain and the social aspects of representation. I like the way it ties together. I don't know if is viable the right thing between economics and environment. I don't know if that's perfect or not. I think it's pretty good. Is there equity, if not necessarily equitable, between economics and the social representation? Yeah, I think that's about right. I'm not sure what variable is supposed to mean, but I suppose it's about that. I just read it all as it's the balance among these things that are important. And so the notion that sustainable is somewhere in that sweet spot, makes sense to me as an overall concept. It makes sense.
I have an image that shows a really small part that goes to social equity that might be a little bit more acceptable.
I don't want to change the artwork so it feels better. I'm just, it's kind of like,
the same
I have
image.
To keep coming back to this.
Yeah,
it's a diagram makes you kind of go, all right, I see whatever the person who first documented this concept, that was the schematic they used to make their point.
Mm-hmm.
And in my
head, next week.
And I think a lot of folks who have this property rights thing that's floating through all this conversation, that environment, and you've made it too small, I can't read it anymore. Economics, thank you. Environment and economic. In my head, the government, certainly for the benefit of all of mankind, should pay attention to the environment. To their quote best available science. We should all be watching that, and the government needs to step in when Johnny starts running his ridiculous plow field through in the field with gasoline right now. There needs to be somebody to stop that guy. Protect your mind. Economic, to me, says make sure that people have ability to produce for themselves. They have economic means that's not impeded by somebody else. So you don't need to protect them by giving them a check. The social piece is where that whole thing just kind of falls sideways because
it's almost
like you're feeding the social part from the environment and from the economic piece. And to me, those things don't...
Well, I think what the social thing might be a little harder to grasp in the United States because we're pretty good at, well, so to speak, in comparison with a lot of other countries. If you look at North Korea or a lot of these other countries where social is just way out there, maybe they've got economic and environmental stability, but without that third factor, you're not going to have a truly well population.
I think it's interesting as you were going through your description, Jim, I don't know if you meant it in this way or not, but it felt like you were kind of describing a role for government in the environmental realm, private sector in the economic realm, although it kind of hurt government, and not a government role in social or something. Where I was thinking of it somewhat differently in thinking that it's what is the role of our representative government in each of these spheres. So kind of like you were saying, it is government's role in balancing those environments. What can we do or not afford to do? How do we promote economic growth? How do we promote social equity?
Yes, I think you said that well. And I'll throw another layer on the economic piece of it. Part of the planning commission, part of the planning document that developers use should be clear, concise, stable, so that the economic piece of their puzzle is not impacted every 5 minutes they turn by some new rule or some change or some, I didn't quite understand the way it was written kind of thing. So that's how government plays a role in economics as it relates back to the planning side of the house, which we're on. I just take offense to the whole general concept of government getting into anything social.
But when you are sitting here on the Planning Commission, everything you do, every plan, has a social impact. So when you adopt a zoning ordinance, there is a social impact in some way, shape, or form. When we adopted the overlay zone in Trucktown that allowed potential growth of trucks parking subject to X, Y, and Z, that has a social implication on the city. So there is absolutely not one decision from a governmental standpoint that doesn't have a ripple effect on your society, whether that is the economic part, the environmental part, or, you know, like when we adopted the ULID, we had a social issue where we had elderly people that weren't planning to develop, but they were being assessed based on highest and best use.
I just think you made the entire point. Every one of those regulations, it was as being a good example, impacted all three of those things.
Right.
You made another example. I'll throw it back at you. So sure. The elderly folks, you've got this real idea that came over them from on high, right?
Yeah.
They didn't ask for it. They didn't buy the land with that in mind. They don't plan to do anything with their land,
right,
other than what they had the rights to do when they bought it.
Right.
So when the government came up with this idea, let's do this overlay,
mm-hmm.
and by the way, it's allowed by the law, so we're going to send you a bill for this idea we had.
Mm-hmm. So you know what we did? Make it equitable?
We're talking about the ULID, right?
The ULID.
Which
so
actually wasn't government-driven.
No, it was citizen-driven. The government was the agency that administered the process.
Administered the process at private property owner's request for service.
Right, exactly. But in doing that democratic process, what we did realize is there are some individuals that have contributed to this society in a very positive way, in our little town society, that need to be addressed so they can continue that contribution through their life. And so what we did was we created avenues to allow their prosperity and then pass, you know, the burden on when the property is either sold or, you know, so basically the investment is, you know, their return on investment is happening. So that's an example. I mean, I could go, you know, over many, many things we do, and so I guess in short is, I don't think you can take any one of those concepts out and sit here and plan a city, because you really do every day think through each one of those and how, and what, like Mike's showing is, when you hit a zoning ordinance or something that you go, this is it, we want to send this up, you're in that gray sustainable area. You're in an area where you're not impeding somebody's financial progress. You're not hopefully degrading the environment. You know, so you hit that sweet spot. So that's kind of the concept, and that's where I feel, you know, I would love to see people like Larry have a little, you know, come from a different. That's why when I see this, I see innovation. But it's because I also see the government system, and I'm not afraid of it, because I see the inner workings of it. When you're not involved, maybe, or for some reason you're seeing, you know, a pea patch is something that, why are we using city-owned property to do a pea patch for Joe Schmo who, you know, can't afford a home? You know, that's the part that, you know, is difficult, because I think that same mentality could come around and see how that pea patch could benefit the whole community, which lifts everybody. Do you know what I mean?
I'm good with what your comments. I think what we're talking about here really is somebody on the outside who does a totally different job, who has some property, who has been around it and enjoyed it, not just living in apartment condos all their life, but actually had land and the responsibilities and the taxes to pay along with it. And there's so many stories out there, real stories, where people had their land, their property values appreciated or flat out taken. So those people who've been there, haven't been to work, been the neighbor, every time somebody starts talking from the government, mm-hmm. their ears will vibrate. So that's some of the piece of the puzzle. It's almost like no matter what you say,
it's going to be
they're going to rub the wrong way because government has a hand in the puddle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see that. So, and that's why I find this intriguing. I mean, I actually love it, this topic and conversation, because it's kind of the crux of the whole.
That's a decision. To go back to the fundamental word of it, society,
yeah.
it is the crux of our society. How are we going to balance these competing interests? Larry's views, my views, others' views that are somewhat in between, and I think Larry would readily acknowledge, and I certainly would, that his views and my views are pretty far apart. But I don't discount that he has a right to those views, and I'm glad he's expressing them. Because just as you said, there's always something in there. There's certainly food for thought. I certainly am not dismissing it. Yep.
And it's great to understand where they come from. Because one thing, as a planner, that I think about all the time is when you go back to thinking about, well, when in 1950, Joe Schmo would do X, Y, and Z, and now they're or there's these regulations and what have you. We as a society have grown and we're going to continue to grow. And so with that, the closer we start living together, the more we interact. And that's just the nature of any, whether it's human or any other population. And when people interact more, they obviously bump up against positives and negatives of each other much more often. And that's where they both go to rely on either help, like zoning, where, you know, there was a day there was no zoning, and there's states with no zoning. And so you could spend $300,000, invest in this big, beautiful house, sit back on your front porch first night, a glass of wine, next thing you know, big farm's going on next door. So as we're dealing with those interactions where, wow, that really hurt Joe Schmo, you know, we're trying to balance all this, and as we grow, it's definitely going to become more and more of an issue. And so this topic for the United States, because that's the interesting thing about the United States, we've had so much land. We haven't ever had to really address these issues where, like in Europe and places where you have twice the densities, they really had to address how their action on this piece of property affects this person because there is no separation.
And that's, I would say that's one of the points that you think about where the founders came from,
mm-hmm.
and they sat down and write stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen that. So they set about to make change.
Right.
And that's the property right conversation. That's, I don't have three generations living in my house the house has been in my family's name for 300 years. That doesn't happen here for a reason. People have made a choice not to. I appreciate your point of density and bring everybody close together. The bus fare gets cheaper and it's easier to supply water.
I'm not pro anything right
that's
now.
That's a fact, though. That's what happens.
What I'm saying is if I live in North Bend, I can turn up my stereo pretty loud and my neighbor's not going to be annoying. But if I live on Capitol Hill and my backyard is this big and every night there's party happening, it impacts. And that's a simplistic way of saying the closer we live, our actions are felt much more intensely.
Well, you conform. People conform because of that example. They go by headphones. They still have music. They adapt.
And that's what's interesting about, I mean, the concept of the species that adapt the quickest usually are the most successful. So in a way, humans are kind of being, worth having to think about this.
I usually think part of the story. The diagram that there is freaked everybody out. Economics, the environment. If society/government's role is to protect the economics of an individual and to protect the environment which the individuals all live in, that's all they focused on. I'll talk about social equity, by the way, that's the drug word. Equity is not social. So the pig farmer, nobody's reviewed the overlays, and the pig farmer lives in Dorman, the guy sees it through his wine glass, he freaks out, he gets a phone, he calls the mayor. The hell are you doing? Let this guy move in. The mayor's going to say, hey, you got some depreciation of your property value as a result of this? Send me the bill and we'll take it out of the pig farmer's pile. That's economics. That's straightforward. You do the math. All of a sudden, this house is depreciated by 50% because his quiet enjoyment is impacted. He can't use his home like he wanted. The government allowed the pig farmer to move in next door. So the role the government plays is to say to the pig farmer, hey, you just impacted this guy. He was there first. He bought this land. Expected quiet enjoyment.
I thought the other flavor of the story was that the government shouldn't play a role between either of them.
Well, then you've got Hatfields and McCoys.
Well, you're not.
So there's a role?
Absolutely. But it's not trying to make somebody social. It's not trying to get equities and social.
Do you have a better word? Because if equity has a very strong connotation.
It's a huge connotation.
Well, how is what you just described not equity?
It's not based on some social scenario. It's based on the economics. An individual has put money down, or whatever they did, to acquire the property. They own it, and all the rights that go with it.
So let's go to the other extreme, then. Where would our country be today without the Civil Rights Act? Or kind of where... That's what South Africa is an example.
See who's on the top line, by the way. Sorry?
So South Africa has got horrible
issues
that they're dealing with. They still deal with horrible issues.
They don't have the resources.
20 years.
There's a resource issue there. I'm not sure I can go there because it's a...
That's true.
There's not enough to feed the people in there. If you really want to solve the problem, they're really crazy. You could say this issue is not about the environment per se, or what people are doing per se to the environment. It's about how many people are on the planet.
Well, you know, I think I relate with you actually quite a bit, but I'll just, since I'm the only woman here, I'll just say it this way. I believe everybody should be a positive contribution to the society. So I don't want $1 of my hard-earned money to go to somebody who's just playing the game, you know, has to go to how many interviews to keep getting their government subsidy check or
unemployment.
But I would like to see future generations have the same opportunities I've had. And my mom, as a woman, did not have, I have more opportunities as a woman than she did. And if this, our society ever went back, just one generation, I would not have had a college scholarship at a basketball, and played college basketball. Because it didn't exist. And it actually, you know, so to me, there is a 50-year example, or one generational example. That's not like saying we've arrived. And I'm not trying to bring up that, but I'm just trying to say that it, as a, that's one thing that, you know, I appreciate about living here, is I have the same opportunity as anybody, and that's not typical in the world.
And that took a equitable solution entitlement.
Yeah, it took somebody actually saying, no. And
it took government playing a role.
Right.
Well, it also took.
And I hope it stays that way.
Yeah, well, it's the ebb and flow. If you all attract a certain level for that, I'm fascinated by it too.
No, it's a great point, yeah.
I think it's, the example there is very similar to an example any minority could have today from where they were to where they are today and maybe where they want to be next. It's about equity. It's about getting my share. If I'm willing to work for it, that's the key phrase here. Your mom's mother and her mother probably were willing to work for it. They did the Rosie River thing. They stood in the streets. They told their husband they'd cut off until they signed a bill. Whatever they did, it got it there. It was effort. It wasn't the government coming in and saying, "Who's going to fix this?" It was political effort.
But
sometimes the invisible hand of the free market fails them. And that's where government does have a role to play, to reach down and lift somebody up when societal barriers keep them.
Look, so I'm fascinated. For a little while now, I've been contemplating just the question in my head about whether we're actually on track or no. Significantly off track. And I'm not sure what my own answer to myself is on that, because in one sense I feel like we have gone way far afield when we start, we've delved into some social and political matters pretty deep. On the other hand, it is sort of the essence of what this whole chapter brings up, and so I think in that respect, I think it is a healthy conversation. It's one we've been into for about 60 minutes, and so a good time to just do kind of a time check. And I'll pose it in this way: as I kind of contemplated, and particularly I want to get back to one of the things that Larry suggested in regard to whether we have this chapter at all. I find myself really reeling back to the very beginning of the conversation, the very essence of the introduction, to say, is there, and we'll wait for you here, is there support for having, for this chapter at all? Do we believe that there is a sound policy reasons that we're going after this chapter, and if so, then what is the context of that chapter? What is it intended to do? And if we're solid in those two things, then I think we've got a good basis for moving forward. Because I think, and I almost thought of it in two respects. One is where we are focused right now. And where we ought to perhaps be focused in that particular notion is first three paragraphs, because it's setting the context of the entire chapter and intent. Now, we could, if we're comfortable that the overall effort is one that is there and should proceed forward. We could probably, it's one sense, I have the feeling that, as with many of these topics, once we get past those first three paragraphs, most of the rest of it is pretty nuts and bolts, and we kind of flow right through it. But I almost, in a sense, I don't even want to think about the nuts and bolts if we're not confident that we've got the right thing here. So I'm not sure how much you can hear what we're going to say. A fundamental question that I have for the two of you is this something we should even, should the Planning Commission be considering this?
Where the rubber meets the road on this is the finance aspect of grant dollars.
And hence back to Gary's, or excuse me, to Larry's question, which was he was citing something he felt that the state had done.
Was a resolution that the city passed just ahead of submitting a grant.
Oh, that's
for
right.
The roundabout and for some wastewater treatment plant improvements. We had to show that we have policies in place. That ordinance provided some very quickly done policies and said we're committing also to developing energy sustainability.
Okay, right. If that was the reference, then I'm regrounded. Okay, thank you.
So I'll just say quickly on the pillars that is not just a creation. That is the standard three that you see on Wikipedia in the European Union and in most planning documents that I could find reference on sustainability elements that I looked up. And yes, I have some time, and you can go back to sleep. So I am comfortable with the way that it's written, and if we're going to change it, then we have to change the entire sentence. Figure out what sustainability then is to the city.
Well, even before we get into the mechanics of change, you feel, and based on what Mike has said, you support that we do need this chapter. Jim, are you there?
I believe we need the chapter. It's, but I look at it markedly different, I think, than the culture that created the document. Does that make sense? So I'm not coming at this whole idea, hey, you know, this sustainability thing is cool as heck. I'm not coming at it anywhere near the idea of social equities. I'm not coming at it from there. I'm saying, hey, look, technology's out there. Why are we drilling holes and blowing stuff and throwing combustion engines and sending out for kids to breathe? That doesn't make any sense at all. So for that reason, I'm saying, let's go figure this out. The technology's out there. In fact, I just watched the show with Noah last night. Nobody. Unbelievable. Fuel cell technologies that's out there. We ought to push it wherever we can. My whole energy here was because there's a floating theme through all this language that suggests that our ordinances and our planning documents should somehow pay attention to whether it's socially equitable or not. It's going to have an impact, absolutely. Everything you do is going to have an impact to as many people as want to pay attention. Throw a rock in the river, there's a ripple that never stops. I get that. But at the same time, I'm not going to spend too much time focusing on the ripple, because I don't know what, 5 steps away, I don't know whether that guy even wants me to pay attention or not. That's my issue. Pay attention to something you haven't asked permission to pay attention to. And you can't know what the
I think you'll find that every time you deal with a planning issue, you're going to decide either A, yeah, he doesn't care, so you know. But just the fact that you have an impact on the social makeup of the city based on how you plan it, to me, makes it essential that that's part of the pillar.
Well, I think, in fact, you help crystallize it. You do this for me often.
I do what I can.
is that what this represents and seems to be getting a reaction to is actually acknowledging that every decision that we make has a social impact. And apparently some would prefer that we keep the blinders on and pretend that we're not taking into that consideration in the other planning documents that we have. And I'm saying, what's wrong with admitting that, in fact, everything that we do has a social impact?
It's equity is the word. You can't address an equitable situation.
Well, but it seems that the definition that you're preferring to use around equitable is equal.
And that is not the definition of equity.
I think if we define what equity means in each instance in this document, then would that not take it into account what social equity would mean if we define equity as in, coal plant development that must meet, whatever standards, or a water treatment plant must meet X standards so it doesn't, pollute the stream. Gas stations must meet X requirements so they don't pollute groundwater. That, to me, is what social equity ought to mean to this document. And would that, if defined in this document in that way, take care of then the concern that it might go to a different direction?
Examples are things that should happen. I'm not sure they outline social equity.
What if social equity was just the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for all? It's not saying we're gonna force the fact that Joe Schmo has the same financial opportunity. I won't even assume I know the here, but really in the end, we're just trying to say we're gonna make sure our planning documents allow life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for all, and that's really what social equity is. Is you could be, because we're getting pretty deep on.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with is that I understand the concept of social equity, and it does not mean equal treatment for all. It does not mean equal outcomes for all. And I'm not going to worry about defining it to some kind of degree. And I, it's a lovely phrase that we use in life, liberty, and that's Declaration of Independence, and I don't think we need to jump to those lofty goals. We're not creating a new country here. We're dealing with one little city.
I'll say this: there's another reason this is a hot topic, and you touched on every part of that. Energy is a resource. You get all different kinds of energies, different resources, and if you start playing around with them, and controlling them, and regulating them, you're controlling, to some degree, the most important thing to anybody.
And that's what form of energy do you believe we're not controlling and regulating?
We are all. That's kind of my point. Once you get to that place where you're touching on all of it, electricity, fuel, whatever the technology is, government's going to have some overlay and regulation that relates to that, just because. But when you overlay this, again, you say equity is not equal. I'm not talking 50-50. I'm just talking about government paying attention to that concept on behalf of one versus another.
Absolutely.
And in
the energy realm, I'm wanting to ensure that we are equitably looking at how we would promote and support renewable energy sources as we have with fossil fuel resources. In the economic realm, I'm wanting to be sure that our promotion of a coal plant or a coal mine has some equity with the producer of biodiesel. And if it's in the environmental realm, I'm wanting to make sure that the environmental cost to the society as a whole is balanced with whatever those other impacts are. I'm looking for some balance among all of
this.
So
you pay for cylinder from the coal mine?
I pay for
cylinder. You write the check to the failed cylinder out of the receipts that the coal
mine. I don't think there have been any. That's just a nothing argument.
It's trying to start something.
We invested as a society in a number of renewable companies, one of which was that. We've invested untold amounts of money into other, with all kinds of impacts, positive and negative.
So the equity question.
We make bets.
The equity comes, how are you making it equitable without equal peace? So maybe I'm missing terminology here. You're saying it like it's not the same impact as what you said.
I'm
referencing it closer to a sense of balance.
Not equal. Who says?
Balance of resources. Balance. I'm not putting all of my eggs into that next Middle East barrel of oil. And I'm not putting all of my eggs into Solana or anybody else that's producing renewable energy. I want to, in the societal sense, I want to ensure that, to the greatest degree possible, that that wealthier individual has the ability to continue to create wealth and hold on to his wealth, as I am interested in ensuring that that the least capable person in society that doesn't have the opportunity has at least a base under them, that they're not dissolving in ways that this society should be above, as far as basic needs of food, health, shelter.
Which in the end we end up paying for it.
You pay for it all, one way or another. So, I'm going to move this back up again because I want to handle another one of the gorillas in the room. And maybe it's already passed, so I don't know. But does anyone have any concern or question about the use of citing the UN Commission that came up with the fundamental definition? I have no issues.
I don't have any real issues, although when you cite something, not only do you give it credibility, but you also suggest, which I think was his issue, is that you've kind of gone through this 1983 information, and that's the follow-on to all of this stuff that gets codified by the Lisbon. And yet, there's a rub there. It was created in the UN, not the US.
Of which we are the biggest member.
We can simplify that one just to get rid of that reference.
I know you suggested it. I reject it. I like the reference. It's not about socialism. It's not about this person named Borkman. This is an international body, and the whole point of this to me is that we're recognizing that there is something much larger than us. That all of these things that we are talking about that come after here are global issues, and our focus is on what is our role within that global environment. And so to be able to cite, here is the most common, globally accepted definition, of which the United States is a huge part, seems to me to be the most appropriate of all. So,
and to me, the source isn't, the source isn't important. The source is just reference to give reference. What's important is the definition. And again, I come back to when Larry is talking. I think I'm really intrigued. And there, in that definition, there is nothing that suggests regulatory. It says the ability, and the ability is how it, is the ability to meet the needs, and that's how you. But that's how you implement your business decisions and your family decisions. And so the result is based on how the implementation is, not the source is irrelevant.
Well, the source is irrelevant until you put it in the document.
Or until you have fear because you don't see eye to eye with that source. And so that's what it is. The source is a source that particular, like for example in Larry's case, he doesn't see eye to eye. So therefore, the definitions becomes a little bit less, of something he can put his arms around, because inherently the source is, where the issue is.
That's a huge issue, because that means that the brand is kind of like Levi's makes skirts. No, if so.
I'm going
to buy a Levi's. You know what I'm saying? So if you're trying to sell blue jeans, you don't talk about skirts, manufactured skirts. Sorry about that. Take the Brooklyn out, and it takes a lot of energy away from the quote, because it's not necessarily that you're signing up for this guy's whole outline of the program.
So I'm going go differently, and I actually think it should stay because it is the true and accurate source of that and allows somebody to go and look up that UN meeting and learn about it. I don't think that the source is as relevant, and if it is such an issue, then footnote it and put it in there.
I was going to suggest. You could certainly go to a footnote.
See, now that's an equitable solution to this problem.
All right.
Oh, we're not having that. Yeah. But in essence, it is detract, and certainly has detracted us far too much from the essence of, if we're talking about sustainability, do we believe that this definition represents sustainability? And again, I would say, yeah, I find no problem with the actual statement. And if you'd have just given me this statement, I would have no clue where it came from. And again, I have no concerns with its particular source. I like the representation that it was telling me that it was a pretty widely circulated and adopted.
Yeah, that's a great story.
So then I'm ready. I'm actually more comfortable with, based after this discussion, my comment regarding that the second more expanded seems to conflict with the first statement.
I changed some of the wording to make it flow a little better. Mm-hmm. If that helps. Okay. Are we ready to move further?
I'm happy with the edits I suggested.
Leaving this graphic in there?
Without
the illustrations?
The three illustrations. I'm very committed to the concept of social environment and economics as being these pillars that we're speaking to. How that's specifically represented by this graphic or other similar graphics, I'm open to looking at other.
Say five some pillars instead of all of that. Some pillars. But I don't see the intersecting the pillars.
So are we getting rid of the illustrations or changing to? Are you saying instead of spheres that intersect?
Gary showed some pillars. Because I think the interconnecting.
It's bubbles, but it has a very small area for social.
Hey, that's much better.
My request to staff would be so try this one off. What's important to me is that it is those three fundamentals.
I myself
would not reference them as pillars. I would, but if there are these three pieces, I do believe that it is about their interconnectedness, and which is generally represented by overlapping bubble diagrams. But if there is something else that gives the essence of those three elements in a interconnectedness, then
this has got wealth creation.
The only thing I would maybe say is that the middle part says sustainable development. And I think we're talking about sustainable city.
There was a Google search on the three pillars and images. So,
Gary is our master at
you're not developing, it's not like you're not growing, you're dying. Right?
There's times where you're spending money that you're not developing, right? You're maintaining what you've developed. I think, it talks about development in the economic one, it's just, but in the middle is sustainable. I think development is just part of what we're. Like, for example,
just really redevelopment, I'm not just saying.
Yeah.
Or non development.
Or, maintaining what you've developed.
So my point was three elements, interconnectedness. I'm going to look at other representations of that in a diagrammatic chart.
If not, then the bubbles that are there are fine without that.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with the way I ever do it.
Are you at peace, Jim?
No.
Or at least ready to move?
I'm happy to move on.
Okay.
You you guys haven't heard me talk this way before. This gets at me all the time. Copyrights, it's like, man,
I've never noticed
anything touches on that. I'm going crazy.
So I am fine with all the rest of your edits. I'm going to just speak or ask a couple questions, but otherwise I'm ready to just move.
And if you are, and obviously they're my edits, so I would suggest we just move through it slowly enough that the others can add over change.
On A3, after the first sentence, you have a couple of changes. A3, go
up that question. Into A3. Can you jump in here?
Yeah.
It's just the format in these spaces.
That's all. And when you go into track 2 and use it here, and it messes up.
So chronological order makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Just let me know as you're ready to scroll down.
Good.
So I do have an actual question there.
Yeah. No, we did not apply for funding from the state for the fire station, but we do have additional building projects in the future. At some point, you know, the city hall. And
I don't know if it's accurate, but I thought Ron had stated something like they looked into the options and they weren't, you know, feasible or something.
Well, which will bring up one of my other points a little later, but he said within the budget that they have, if they did not feel that they had the capital budget to do something. So I think a few elements came back in after the so we didn't do it on the fire station, or we were, have we applied in for anything that we've done in the past?
On building projects?
You mean the lead?
This is about lead.
No.
It's too recent.
And this is just stating, obviously, that this is something that we need to keep our eye on. But in the planning world, the discussion is around the fact that LEED does come with an administrative process that's a little onerous. And really, the crux of what you want is the benefits of the implementation of it, but do you really need to go through the hoops? So what we've been always adamant about is LEED or equivalent, because we're only interested in equivalent. The certification process is where the kind of debate.
Trophy.
And I'm really good with not chasing trophies. Yeah. I'm interested in that. Not coming with the reality of it.
Wildlife habitat is a regulated feature of your critical areas.
You mean why is it required to recognize? It's just not a regulation.
It's underlined just because the word
doesn't recognize it.
Oh, I got you. Wildlife would be fine.
They don't like wildlife. We need to add that to the
Sometimes you have to help Bill Gates with common sense.
Yeah.
Or add it to your
So, I agree with you on how it's embodied in the Constitution, but the Constitution doesn't say it protects the right to develop.
Yeah,
so.
And this is to, you know, again, this particular opening paragraph brings to sharp focus the wide disparity of belief that we have here.
Well, it drives home the other point, which was the reference. The reference theme, right? So we or whatever, so we mentioned that all of a sudden there's a color in the whole next sentence. So to bring up the first line is sustainability property rights reference the Constitution, even just by saying the Constitution. Flavored the rest of the paragraph.
Which I think is a good and a notion to, you know, if my objection, if it's not clear there, is that I do not find a particular language in the U.S. Constitution, therefore I know it is an incorrect citation. So there is not language that says fundamental right protected property.
You could say the same thing by the set says the right to manage and own its property possessions is a fundamental right, period. In that sense. You don't necessarily need to say where it came from. If there's an objection, putting it in there, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I know that Larry and others that tend to be very property rights oriented would probably appreciate some kind of reference to the Constitution. How does that look embodied in the principles of the Constitution?
I think it's attributing something to the Constitution that is not there. My entire point is that there is no inherent right to do whatever you darn well please with your property in the Constitution. It does not occur. It is not one of the fundamental notions of how we founded the country. It has always been a balance between public and private interests. So, no, I think it's the wrong opening.
I'm trying to decide what you want to do. I'm just wrong. Because there's all kinds of, maybe the specific language that doesn't appear in the Constitution, but preceding documents that led up to the writing of it, we're all about that. The folks who started this place got their crap taken away from them. That's the reason they came here.
Actually, that's great lore in how the country was founded, but not terribly accurate.
Put it on the street level. Hey, I'll show it to you. But those papers, you can read them.
I have, thank you.
All right.
Taught them, actually. So again, what concerns me here is not about whether there's a belief that the notion's embodied or what is it. It is that if we start citing law, Constitution being the ultimate law of the land, then we are making a very bold statement about individual property rights. That I just absolutely do not believe is there in that body of law. The body of law, in fact, common law, is again back to the balance. There is, and you alluded to it earlier, Jim, all the examples of give and take between private and public entities where rights of the individual, rights on their property, are balanced against the public good, and so more specifically than rights, it is property ownership or economic value of property being impacted by the greater public good, and when we're all go, which I think speaks a lot to some of the others' concern on private property rights. One of the things that has happened, I believe, in this country that's gone a little too far, is that we've had a long history of eminent domain for public good, private properties needing to be taken up because that's the path the road needed to take, that's the path that other public entity needed to use, a rail line, which didn't have to be public or private goods, but just a few years ago, maybe only 1 year ago, I believe I'm correct in that, I was citing New York, but it might have been Connecticut, had an example of a local jurisdiction that went in and condemned for eminent domain for private developer. For a private developer, nothing about public good, other than citing that this higher and better use for the land by this private developer. That, to me, was entirely egregious. So I want, I use that example to say, hey, I'm not immune. I'm not a socialist. I'm not promoting that the notion of private property rights does not exist. But I'm saying, but it's not.
inalienable right in our Constitution. It's not there.
Do you want to elaborate further on your last sentence in there?
If you start monkeying around with this paragraph, if you take out that conversation around property rights, where they came from, where they perceived to have come from, then the heading of the paragraph needs to change. Because the rest of the paragraph is not talking about rights, it's talking about
I would disagree with
going to do to the property owner.
Let me say individual rights.
You know, I think what one of the things that I was trying to your to what you I think you were asking me, Mike, were when I got past particularly the first sentence, what I thought the essence of what you were trying to get at under B was really what is the last sentence, where policies of this energy and sustainability element apply to the development of private property, focused on creating incentives over regulations. It's more of the statement about what are we trying to accomplish within the, you know, within this document. To me, that was the essence of it. And so in looking at what to do and trying to get across this notion, that's where I'd start. I'd bring it back to the top. And if I were going anywhere beyond that, it would be, again, speaking to balancing those interests. But I'm not even sure it needs to go there. It's talking about how what we're promoting here is going to be applied. In fact, the second sentence talks to the balance. Yeah, well, I was going to say, that's why I went back to the original text. I guess the simplest thing that I could suggest would be just strike the first sentence and begin with sustainability and goals.
Yep.
I think at that point, it works for me.
Okay.
You thought that maybe you could take track changes off this.
Sure.
You
know,
you read it okay?
I'm good. Okay. I have a question about your last sentence. I'm not sure how it fits.
Oh, yeah, and could be kept or not. What I was thinking about in that context was that I certainly don't have all the rest of our code memorized, and to me there was a bit of a flavor here of, you know, it is setting a direction, and I wanted to be sure that it was not implying in any way that what's being discussed here supersedes what is a written regulation and therefore right in other pieces of the code.
It doesn't set a precedent, but I think it does set a direction for evaluating regulations to make sure that they are balanced and are protecting. Striking that balance between the public welfare and the private interest.
So I guess where my head was going with it, I'm not able to recreate the sweet spot I was when I wrote it. It is. Some of the concern being expressed for, hey, are we creating some new mandate here? It was just another, it was one more sentence to emphasize, in a sense, that we're talking about an incentive-based and a philosophical framework here. It's not the actual regulations.
It means that we don't have to do incentive-based for everything. We have also other obligations, be it state law, things that we do have certain requirements.
Sure. Yeah.
For the purposes of this evening, it's kind of been there for food for thought. I'm more than fine to not have that statement in there. If it doesn't seem to be getting at.
I'm guessing like city code, just what the word is that isn't there. And I'm wondering if we could just insert code in the sentence above so it read, with information for wise decision making rather than mandates for, and then insert code compliance. Is that kind of blue or jumbo to just make sure that it's not saying that you're adhering to a specific code?
That's actually good.
I think that works. Right now in my head, that works.
I like it.
I'll reread it again, and who knows what I'll come up with.
So after it makes sense. Sentence goes away?
Yes.
That's the original last sentence or the new last sentence?
That was the new last sentence.
I'll throw this in, because it seems to me it says the same thing we're trying to say. I'm beginning in the middle of a paragraph. It's the last sentence. And my thought is, we don't need to say anything else other than this. The policies of energy sustainability only apply to the development of private property. They are focused on creating incentives rather than regulations, providing individuals with information for wise decision making rather than mandates for compliance. Why are we not just saying that? The other stuff is kind of.
I think it helps to set a precedent that you're trying to strike a balance, you're not trying to weigh to one side or the other. And you want that clear.
Jim, you started where?
He just basically searched that last sentence, which is kind of what I said. And to me, that was the essence of the paragraph. So I think we landed in the same spot. That is the essence. But I did like the idea of the balance, and that's why I backed up to the second sentence.
Take your point and run that backwards, maybe you've kind of gotten there already. So if I take the original second sentence, the federal constitution sentence, that goes away. Mm-hmm. Now we begin with sustainability involves striking the perfect balance between the word providing can go away and protecting the interests of public welfare with getting rid of protecting again, striking the word. The rights of individuals who should be helped.
Can you accept that all that text here has remembered to see it through?
Oh, I like that.
Good.
Okay.
You know, as we go through, especially with this document, even the word appropriate balance. I think truthfully,
no such thing.
The best way to get a point across to people is short, because you lose people.
Yeah.
And the more we can keep this to a very succinct document, I think the more it will have impact on people.
Yeah. Which, kind of what my cover email is. Should all of us be looking for opportunity to cut words?
Interestingly, you know, I was thinking about that with, you know, like our transportation plan, that was 100 and something. It's just too hard for the average human being, average citizen, to know what's going on when your documents are that big. And so that's one thing I think this group, we could really do a lot of work with.
Well, I like what we've done with this paragraph. We'll get it a second and a third look at it, but this is, to me, as much of a
yep.
Great.
Okay.
On to yes. So.
I'm on E11. We go there?
Oh, yes.
So I'll just read. Wherever possible, foster wise, sustainable land use decisions in the community, and limit regulations.
Okay.
For incentives rather than use of specific.
Yeah, it's going to sit through the sentence rather than then say the same thing.
Well, you're talking about kind of objective, really, not how you do it. Is that so important? Whenever possible, foster wise and sustainable land use decisions in the community.
And then you're going to, or and you're saying stop
limit regulations.
And limit regulations.
But you usually have to, what I think that does that yours right now might not is future planning commissions use these to create the policies that you guys create all the time. And this basically says a very clear
use
incentives. So you're losing that incentive part. And there is a lot of strategies when you start doing that.
Well, so through incentives and
so if I were the anti-tax advocate, I would want to strike the incentives because it implies that you might provide tax dollars to support that or loss of tax dollars. So I might want to go where Jim did, which is just say, hey, limit regulations.
Mm,
I disagree, by the way, but I think that's
interesting perspective. Instead of regulations,
just put that bold print. Hold that in there.
Is this what you're saying?
No, and limit regulations.
Does it make sense?
No, it's weird.
Sustainable land use decisions.
The first part of the sentence is saying what you're trying to do, and the second part of the sentence is saying how you're trying to do it. So we need to say how are we trying to do it?
All right, through incentives and minimize regulations. How's that?
That means well, that's would have some more regulation than rather than regulation.
Yeah, okay.
I thought sense is actually getting to what you're wanting to say.
Yeah,
just say okay, get rid of them.
I just made some scratches on this. So that's good.
You know, on the top one where we added the word property, right? I mean, is it more finite? Was that that was Rob?
Yeah,
that was me.
Okay, because to me, in the individual rights, it's just not the property. So to me, that says a lot less than what it said before. Because there's individual rights that are afforded through economic programs and what have you that have nothing to do with property.
I guess so, and I know why I use the word property, because I'm thinking about planning and I'm thinking about what we do, and it's all about property.
Yeah.
Right. And make sure that we're understanding that property by definition is not just meaning the land, right?
Okay.
It's all property.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So your comment on 1.2, I totally get that. And I was just struggling with
I had no clue. If I'd had an idea, I'd have suggested it.
I think it gives direction that at some point people collectively decide something is overly burdensome.
Well, but again, if we're going to shorten and keep things short and sweet, to me, the sentence that ends at are no longer necessary, period.
Necessary versus relevant.
Because if they're no longer necessary, I mean, if, that's also overly burdensome.
Well, I guess that's part of the definition.
Yeah, so to me, that's just added language.
Well, that's.
I mean, because if they're overly burdensome,
you mean instead
if they're
of
necessary, then they should be there. Even though, like, the shoreline management is burdensome.
Did you hear Jim's? Mm-hmm. He suggests using applicable in replacement for the word necessary.
No longer applicable.
Mm-hmm. That's going to feed into the burdensome conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that.
Education.
Those are all good. support an understanding of the lateness.
Oh, lateness.
Yes.
I'm just going to do all the accepting later on.
Yeah.
So one of the comments that Larry provided was he didn't see the essential purpose of this, but I think it is important to state this because the competitive grant issue is all about greenhouse gas reduction. So I think it's important to acknowledge the topic and say we are addressing it through these different sections of our comprehensive plan and develop regulations.
I think it's important as well. And so what I was trying to do, I knew this would be a hot button area, and so that's why I was trying to think through, well, what do I think we're trying to say here?
And yeah, I think that's comments. Very well said there. It takes away some of the sting.
I think one of the comments Mr. Costello made was about CO2 and it not being accurate. And I don't know if you read it correctly, because I agree that CO2 is not the most harmful gas, greenhouse gas, but what this says is the most dominant.
Most
abundant, yeah, prevalent.
Oh,
so that's
because I thought when he said it, I thought I was hearing he was saying the most abundant, and I was going to disagree that because I might not
was just coming.
I thought it's debatable. That's what I thought he said.
I believe it's correct.
Dominant is kind of funny words. Maybe abundant or prevalent would be better.
I'm fine with it as written. I'm
just saying. Dominant is if it's a percentage. If you're doing a
It is. That's
the
problem. Yeah, you're right.
I think it's correct. It's
really
good.
Yeah. Okay. But that's actually a good perspective that you saw.
It would be valuable to listen back to his comment
when
Tom's doing the transcribing and see, because that is a good point. I definitely heard that it wasn't the majority.
We do.
That's what I heard.
That was good.
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 Okay. So you just had some internal thoughts there.
Yeah, it wasn't I hope it may spark some of you. Just the word I wasn't entirely comfortable with, but I wasn't sure. So
simply because it's supported by.
I mean, that is actually our economy, so it's actually somewhat.
Well, I guess, and my first thing is well, I suppose it probably, if our tax revenues say that that's the majority, you know, tourism is our number one, then I guess, again, it comes back to acknowledgement. We're acknowledging we're a tourism-dependent community. Well, I'm okay with acknowledgement. I just wasn't sure. Would we truly say we are dependent?
No, I think we would. So would it be a local economy supported by tourism? Partially supported by tourism?
No,
because we're not totally supported
by.
Thanks for your hours.
Try to stay away
from the ball. That's it.
So there, your comment. I agree it is true regardless of scale. But I think it is. Scale does take effect when you get really small. You really have to just try to figure out the very most efficient ways to do things.
I don't at all disagree with that, and I certainly understood where you're coming from. Is trying to make a point that I figured Jim would probably make, which is that our responsibility is to be efficient at whatever level, small or large. And when, as I was making a comment, what I was thinking about is that we're a growing community, which would imply that we will continue to grow as a city service agency, as well as it takes more service or service personnel to take care of that growing community. And so at whatever stage, to be cost effective is our responsibility. Again,
yeah, I think it's good to get to add responsibility.
Not sure how it would change the phrase. It was more just wanting to
Well, again, what if it just stopped at a jiggle?
Well, I was actually more objecting to the, because of the small scale.
Right.
And limited staff. I'm saying our responsibility is to be sustainable, practical, achievable, cost neutral, economic savings. Mm-hmm. Those are all good things. I just was not relating them to the size or scale of this.
I agree.
I absolutely agree with that.
So I'm not sure what the rewrite is, but that's where I would go after it is.
Well, it should just say resources and measures to address sustainability need to be practical and achievable, period. Because I think that's, yeah, that was where it started. It would end up very achievable. And then I'd get rid of the rest. After achievable.
Yeah. I'm good with that. Yeah, right to the essence.
I like that, Rob, that you even pointed out it shouldn't be at the side. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's
good. I love this little call-out spot. That's a lot.
I have more.
Yeah.
I had to take a look and see if there's other relevant that aren't kind
of yep.
political. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes it tough.
Wouldn't just say positive.
Okay, I can't read this.
No, I'm not gonna fight. This is where I brought up before my issue with the coal, shipping the coal just so it blows back in our face. And my overall true comment here was, should there be a statement in here in an appropriate place that addresses the concept that even the local government should take positions to other entities beyond them to show where they stand on because they will have an impact on that local government. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it would be. I don't know exactly what it should say. It just seems to me, and I know it can be silly as well, because I mean I've read the words here and again about, you know, some little city that, you know, writes a ordinance passes a resolution, I guess it would be more likely, pass a resolution objecting to something that the United Nations or...
You know where that one fits, it's equity.
Back to equity, but it can certainly be a little silly, but it seemed to me, and again, I wrote this in here about the coal because that was the one that's visceral in my mind about... Hey, that has an impact on us right here in this valley. That coal smog's coming right back home to us. Why are we investing my tax dollars to ship it? Mm-hmm. I don't get that. Keep it home. Burn it better. Not even, you know, I'm not even anti-coal. I'm just saying, if you're going to burn coal, then let's us use our own resource. So, I know we don't, ultimately, this community isn't going to make that decision, but should not City Council make its feelings known?
Well, that's kind of an interesting topic, that the council has been very adamant that they don't, as a council, back any given issue, because since there's seven members, I don't think you ever really get...
It's tough.
Yeah, true buy-in from us, so they feel like if it is... individual wants to back it or whatever. And that's come up at the Chamber of Commerce too on many, many topics where as a chamber they say, well, we as a chamber board should back this policy that Snoqualmie or North Bend's implementing because it's going to help business. But then you always have somebody else on the board that sees how it hinders or hurts the other individual that's
a different business.
Right. A different or what have you. So it's been a kind of a policy across the board that on both situations. So,
well, again, I throw this in here in the philosophical realm. I think it's important. I don't know where it would be, what it would be. and I doubt it would ever get adopted. So, but I threw it out there, and now I can walk away.
I'll throw another layer on the comment, the whole gas scenario, and natural gas, and half a dozen other solar technology even. We're sending that stuff off to different places under the heading of sustainability for our food.
How is it sustainable?
How is it when somebody else burns our coal that we're better off? How is it when somebody else burns our gas that we're better off?
That was my
advance.
How silly it is to think that because it's so bad for us to burn it, it's okay that they do.
Right. Exactly. That's my exact argument. It's that on the face of it, it is illogical.
So would you like a lightning?
I'll take the responsibility if I can think of how it should be written and where it should go. I'll put it in the next round.
Start with credits.
This one is, it comes back to again, you know, what the level of comfort is with the policy. So we have had comment and kind of direction from some of our council members that they don't want to see a policy that limits the potential to make a decision on a future investment such as building a city hall or so forth.
So wait, Rob, your comment there is, by definition, these practices do not demonstrate pay that the city should not be promoting them. Okay. More of a mandate for the city.
I'm concerned that you're only saying payback, not investment.
Well, the comment's not drawn to the word investment. It's just the way that it shows up. But I guess what I was thinking about, and I may be misinterpreting the way the sentence is intended to read. But what I was feeling I guess I was just troubled by the sentence. It was like, on the face of it, if there's not a payback, we shouldn't be promoting.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, this is one where we had stronger language before that said, consider pursuing a environmental standards such as the silver or equivalent in municipal projects. But council members expressed a concern about limiting choice, and this was one of the ones that Larry commented strongly on that he didn't feel it was appropriate. It's the reduced scope of the policy.
So I think my comment's just off base. I'll say that. I think rereading it and with what the two of you just said, I'm realizing that it's about the public with a municipal project. I think I overlooked municipal in this. I was focused on the idea that we might be promoting some technique that did not have a payback. So I just misinterpreted the way I read it. So I just strike the comment.
That's good. So this one, when possible, it's just a recognition that it's a lot more difficult for dealing with food waste at events because people aren't necessarily very careful with where they're throwing things. I think it's certainly a good goal to...
20 years ago, you had said the same thing about the recycling can. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
So my point is the whole point here is to push the edge. You know, a year ago, they said you couldn't recycle food scraps in Seattle. Mm-hmm. They're doing it successfully, by what I've read. And I guess we're doing it now here. I
American, so I don't think it's about when possible. If you want when possible, it comes at the beginning of the sentence. It's about all of it. The point is, it is all possible.
Are we agree on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so you want to keep when
so
possible?
No, I want to strike it.
Oh, yeah, I missed that. I did the wrong thing. Just accept it.
No, you know, as I'm thinking this through, there's... So, if you can't compost meats, right?
No, you can't.
In your North Bend bin, you can compost meats. You can throw meat into your compost. Okay.
Okay. If you're asking me two things, are you asking me by the public trash collection agreement just entered into is meat an allowable substance in there? I believe so. I will not, say that I know that
100%,
but I believe it is. But if you're asking me in a literal sense, is meat a compostable item? Yes, it is. And bone and other things natural. So
it is also in the
residential. I want to make sure that food waste, because thinking about we've done the block party, for example, the recycling. We haven't done food waste, but...
I'll tell you how radical I am. I'd like to see this all being diverted into feed instead of into a landfill.
I'm the first one that agrees with it. I just wanted to make sure that our contract allowed meats, because in those scenarios, you have meats and vegetables so mixed, you don't have that opportunity.
Sure. So that's in the residential contract. I don't know if it relates different to...
Let's make a note to confirm that we're not setting ourselves up.
If indeed you were setting yourself up for a problem there, then I would suggest that the lead word is to promote instead of to ensure.
Well, I think recycling we should ensure. Recycling is very basic. We do have recycling facilities.
I'm saying we should be doing both.
I agree with that, because someday recycling your waste, your food waste, is just as logical as recycling.
Waste management, the Behemoth company, it's a local design, it's huge. So they have, I think, in five or six locations in the country, they have, it's basically a garbage dump. The transportation we have, for example, that those bins actually go to a facility that incinerators, steam / generates electricity. There is no waste. It's all recycled material. So there's no off gas in it. It's bad stuff. So 2,500 degrees or something like that comes into the person. And it strikes me as that's got to be on the horizon to something like that.
Well, but it is a way of disposing waste, and it's certainly, I suppose, philosophically, be better than putting it in a landfill. But is the generation of burning it all to nothingness, is that the best use of, say, aluminum cans or food scraps? I don't know.
I guess my point is the garbage companies are evolving at least as fast as we'd like them to.
Actually, they're one of the, I think, most progressive industries right now.
Well, it's market because it comes back to
it's energy. Yeah.
Cost.
Yeah.
Land. And their biggest cost is land.
Yeah.
It's economics.
It's economics again.
Well, and they have a product that they can sell in the end.
Absolutely.
So you were suggesting making this more of a permanent collection. The way that these things are set up is we receive grant funds from the state for doing these activities. And so the cost is not borne directly by American citizens. But if we were to go to put it into the contract.
I understand what I'm looking at this document as it's the reach is the vision and the envision. The easier it is for the individual, the better. And I can say I was personally being impacted by the inability to get rid of hazardous waste when I wrote that, saying,
okay, we have these recycling events. Once a year, somebody's out here in Snoqualmie to collect hazardous waste. That really just doesn't cut it. If we're trying to keep this stuff from going into the bad directions, you're actually almost encouraging me to improperly dispose.
Wait, I'm sorry. Right. Instead of writing more, why don't we just say provides? Provide frequent or provide regular.
Well, why not just take out the word periodic?
Yeah, provides.
Sure. Hazardous waste collection. Yeah. Okay. So, well, but again, I get well, I'm going to still be stuck on it because that's still saying special events. And my point is, it shouldn't be a special event.
I agree.
I should be able to do it
5 days a week. It is kind of an interesting thing to bring up because if our contracts with the waste management included, like, say, one weekly pickup of hazardous waste.
If you had, you know, it was like many of those folks back east, those contracts, they have in them, you know, large, I don't know what they call it anymore, but, you know, there was a day a month where you could put a couch up.
So I think he's saying get rid of special.
Couch.
You know, large stuff. You could, you know, there was, you know, it wasn't your everyday waste stream because it had to be handled specially, but it's the same concept.
Right.
Why aren't we, you know, we understood the whole, in some respects, it's the most dangerous thing that we're dealing with. Why are we making it the most difficult?
Mm-hmm. And because it's so difficult, people sit on it for years and years and years, and next thing you know, it's leaking in there.
And you've got dispersed.
Well, that's the whole incentive to do these in the first place, is it costs more to go back to the out in the Middlesbrough Road and clean up the dumpings than it does to manage a program.
To manage a program and collect it. Right. It helps the guy that Gary was speaking to, instead of tossing his used motor oil out into the lake, oh, I just set it out on the curb, they're going to collect it next week. And I wasn't even thinking of curbside collection. I'm just thinking of municipal facility collection.
Or even if our waste management would come to a municipal spot, so everybody right. would come on Friday and right. drop off their
right.
then one
same
truck.
Same as we do for the yeah. leaf recycling, right?
I think
push the envelope
push
here.
That.
Batteries, etc. that come to a yeah. central location. City sponsors it. Garbage collection service. Part of the contract.
I wouldn't go there. That's going to be a cost. I think what you had
before is good. Is curbside for hazardous waste? Yeah. Okay. And if you take out, take out the word event, provide hazardous waste collection.
Well, we are still talking about events if we're not talking about the curbside pickup.
Not really. Like if our contract was that waste management came to the city once a week and picked up the city's waste,
okay.
then just citizens would just be required
at
to
Public
drag
Works, out. You've got the big area for collecting all the leaves and trash if there were another set-aside area. Mm-hmm. I know it's scary. We'll be wrong. We don't care much longer.
Every day go to work, there's another bin of toxic substance in the parking lot.
Good
morning,
Steve.
I can see that, but I think a liability. If the city sets this place up on city property and some
stone
brings a 50-gallon drum of
it's there, right?
We do that.
Nuclear biohazard crap. Mm-hmm. The city's got to deal with it.
Only it's not a city, it's a school, so where our children are
better.
Is that where it's at? I thought it was our Public Works District.
No, we always hold it at Snoqualmie and Middlesbrough.
Oh, the
and
one at...
drive-through thing.
Yeah, I've
yeah.
done
so, yeah, I put can't. It out there with the children.
I'm not assistant.
Even the metal recycling places, it's a highly managed circumstance because there's actually radioactive isotopes in a lot of the heavy metals. And then once you take it in there and have a sensor to pick it up, and I'm thinking as a sympathetic, we could have this whole elaborate program going on.
Now, Larry had suggested that this was a section that didn't need to be here, but I think this is important to recognize that transportation is a big source of greenhouse gas emissions. And we do have policies in the transportation element that address it. So
well, I thought it was an appropriate reference, and that was kind of to my comment. I thought what we're doing is we're referencing, hey, we've already got this in other places, so we're not duplicating and not adding. And so therefore, I was saying, okay, so to help me get my wrap my head around the whole thing,
yeah.
You know, let's be sure we take a look at those yeah. pieces and go, oh, it's done, or, oh, well, wait a minute, there's something missing.
Yeah.
And if I could go a step further, one of the other points Mr. Costello made was about programs that aren't readily available or that will be with us in some future time. And I was watching a podcast a couple of weeks ago on energy, and the country of Israel is going to adopt 100% electric vehicles, and this should be completed by 2015. Also, the island of Hawaii, I think, is going on that same program, and I don't know what their implementation date is. There's a lot of other areas that are looking at doing all 100% in, because you can't do it based on a slow individual consumer market. You have to do all in, switch over the lines. And
are you talking about the private market as well?
You know, I don't know how it's all being implemented, to be honest with you. It was the guy that worked with the Prime Minister of Israel, and he gave a talk on how they did it, with basically the model that you're buying energy units like you do gas versus trying to pay for the battery and this huge vehicle. So it was changing the model of cost and being able to switch out your batteries of electric vehicles, that, like you do fill up your gas, you're just interchanging the batteries and you're up to it. So.
My dad was very, very close to buying a Nissan Leaf. He didn't ultimately because he was worried about the battery. And he said if it was a switchable battery, it would just flip out when it gets to the end of its life.
What I was saying was that is the next yeah. generation is more interchangeable. Yeah.
So I think really it's within 2 years that we're going to see some dramatic changes based on what this guy is.
You know what's interesting about those cars too? It, like riding a bicycle on the road, you can't hear them fall. They just make a funny.
Well.
They need to have a little clicker to
the point.
I was
going to
say, there was a community that passed, I believe, I'm correct in this, that passed an ordinance requiring a noise generation.
Oh, really? That's weird.
Yeah. Because of that, you know, it was scaring people or,
yeah.
you know.
There was an interesting article.
Yeah.
We're complaining about that because they didn't hear the cars.
So well, you know, like
a semi with the same sound.
It's kind of interesting because bikers, you know, have the bells to let people know.
Right.
These cars are just silent.
There was an interesting article.
It's another adjustment thing. It's like the roundabout.
Yeah,
you'll get there.
Yeah. What are you saying, Mike?
Anyway, it's an article on NPR about what should an electric car sound like because of that same reason. Mm. It doesn't have to sound like a gas or internal combustion engine, so it could be a kind of just means a sound.
Right.
What are you using?
Be nice. I mean, I like the fact that it would reduce.
You just want to sneak up on me.
No, not. No, but I, you know, like I used to live in Kirkland, and you could hear the freeway, and I always joke that that was the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
I said,
oh,
that's just the ocean. But that would all go away. Can you imagine that day? Where you don't have that much? Oh, that's true. You would hear that.
It's the tires you're mostly.
Yeah, that's true.
Living close enough to this highway.
That's true.
Pavement and tires are there.
Yeah.
A couple spots. Like Google,
they're testing.
Literally, it goes. Just you drive it over
the
pavement.
Well, the strip, the you know, they did a test strip in the center lane from 31, not all the way to 32, but if you're on this,
right.
Yeah, and it's now wearing out. I've noticed, but man, for a while. Well, any pavement
like
that.
It was just quiet.
I mean, yeah, it's the sound difference is incredible.
That's
just within your car,
car, by the way. Just to thank the city of North Bend for North Bend Way.
Yeah.
That was the quietest, smoothest piece of that
pavement.
I've
been out there.
I just drove on it for the first time. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge reduction in noise. If you go then on the rest of North Bend Way, you definitely.
Oh.
Yeah, it's useless.
Did you say it was a half mile? I asked Ron how long it was. I'm curious. I didn't go down there to get
him up. I honestly, not a good judge of distance.
Well, it goes from 468. How far does it go out?
Southeast 140th to it's 32.
Oh.
That's more than 40.
Yeah. No, he said a half, but I thought it was more than that. Have you guys been up to Whistler lately with the impervious asphalt that was put to Squamish?
Mm-hmm.
Part of the Olympics, they repaved all that, and they used impervious asphalt. And it's intriguing because it's in sections, so you'll be cruising and just you have that spray, and the trucks go by, and your window wipers are going like that, and then all of a sudden, and your windows go dry. Because it's not raining, it's just all the spray. And then you'll go a little farther, and you need your hit. And it's intriguing how much spray is just on the roads from your water system.
Oh, that
just
sits,
right. Yeah. Right. If you go up there and try to think about that as you go through Squamish, it's really cool.
You gotta get washed up to test that. Everybody just loves that.
Yeah.
Do you get down with the ground water?
Oh, no, there is that.
Instead of the streams.
ES goal 11. It was back on. Yeah. It's 9:30.
But it's equitable.
It's true. Drama.
I just want it beefed up.
Okay.
Scroll.
Can I ask a question on that? The word transparent. Are we okay? Is that what's that?
Title
Facebook. Okay.
That's fine. I think it's an important issue to get out.
Yeah.
Get transparency.
Yeah.
So the one, right, so the comment here is whichever one. It seemed like this is the right section. And it seemed like one more tie-in where we were talking about partnerships with the school district and youth participation, you know, these different things. I think a lot of times about, you know, we've got a variety of different boards and commissions, and are we getting the right interchange of information? And one I was particularly thinking about that intersects the most is the EDC and the Planning Commission. I'm thinking, well, I think for the most part, I have no clue what they've set up as an agenda, what they're working on, where they're, what are their goals, what are they looking at, how what we're doing either impacts or complements or degrades, you know, their efforts and vice versa. Are they promoting something that we're actually considering something different? Now, I know that staff, of course, are involved in both, and that would be the primary place to look for that interchange, but I'm thinking, we're talking about an educational document. Educating the members of those commissions and boards would be. So that's.
Rob, I think that's actually a great observation as a citizen and a person that's volunteering on boards that I have thought about, but you probably don't know what the ABC's working on. And your efforts are definitely aligned.
They're very, well, and they're very, yeah, whether we're, well, and my point is, I don't know if we're aligned or not.
That's my, yeah. But you should.
but we certainly
that.
Should be.
You should know that, and you should also be able to help both boards accomplish kind of the year's goals, which right now we're acting pretty independently, which isn't good.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about that. Yeah.
I don't think I've got the right wording right there yet. Cross, it's not just cross organizational, but between boards. Cross boards sounds funny.
Yeah. Well, we got the flavor. You can work on it.
Interorganizational.
During daylight hours.
Yeah, well, let's work on that one so it's just a quick sentence.
Yes.
Right now it's getting all around. But that's my nature. I'm just like,
okay. Scroll, Mike.
Sounds good.
That's it.
Whoa.
Right, 17 pages. Good. Always like it when it ends early.
Thank you again for your comments.
So, I think I really like kind of where we got to tonight. We had some really solid conversation. I would hope that we can have perhaps shorter, but a similar opportunity at the next meeting. But my question would be, based on where you feel we are now, would it be the staff's expectation that you'll come forward with, you know, another reading, but with the proposal to vote it out at the next meeting?
Yeah, we need a public hearing.
It kind of feels like we're...
The next meeting time, we're not going to be here. It's the APA conference that we're
So, like me, so we're holding the meeting. We don't need that, do we?
We
need a quorum. That's all, this, all the rules say.
That's actually an interesting concept. If there isn't a staff, please call the meeting. You probably could.
I don't intend to call one, but.
So, anyway.
Good, yeah, right. So we're canceling the next meeting.
Yeah.
And then, so the following would be a public hearing. And so then, typically, of course, then we're looking to have a final conversation and vote following a public hearing. So I think that, I mean, I'm fine with that, with the understanding that, of course, depending on feedback we might get in the public hearing, it's possible we wouldn't be ready to vote. But I think with the work we've done on this and as much thought as we've gone into it, I would feel to be there with a couple of those upfront things like the diagram.
You think it's helpful to send this out to the Planning Commission as a whole as to where you guys ended up tonight with that caveat? So the ones, because one thing we don't want to do is we might have to in the end when people miss.
Per the rules, we do not revisit decisions that were made in the meeting, right? So this is now the new document. We've made these decisions. So it has to strike new ground.
Mm-hmm.
You can help me remember that when we get there. But on that other side, though, I would like to see a more full commission here, because I think it is such an important new element, and so we'll make sure that everybody's had that opportunity. Which again comes through what you're saying. If we get this revised draft out, and I would say to include the note that says, you know, our expectation is that we will move to public hearing and final deliberations and a vote at the next meeting, so that that's what, you know, that the other commissioners who are here to know this and are aware that that's the direction they're heading. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't come as a surprise when they receive their document.
Yeah.
Attach a report if you can get on this to the discussion.
Doesn't this get up, doesn't that pop online at some point?
It does, but you have to click through.
Well, you can just put the URL in the email, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're suggesting.
Yeah. Okay.
Or get so sophisticated. Anything else for the good of the order?
Tuesday.
Thanks, yes. Kind of last minute notice, but we are going to recognize October's community planning month. I don't know if this is
National.
National Community Planning Awareness Month, basically. And so
it's October.
October is, yeah. So, and it just kind of came through the planning director blurb this week with, hey, who's doing a proclamation to recognize boards? And so we felt like that was something that is important to recognize all the boards, the volunteers that really form and shape the city through volunteering time. So we want to invite all of you to the council meeting on Tuesday, October 2nd, where the mayor will present a proclamation. And we're going to basically the boards were inviting are you guys. Okay, I'm going to send that email out.
You better get that invite out there.
You, Parks Commission got invited last night, and then EDC. And Medical Farm. And that was it. Because those are our official city boards.
Is it going to be ice cream?
That's a good point. Maybe we will have something for you guys. Get after
that was October 2nd?
It's October 2nd, yeah.
Do we have to do public notice of the plan commission shows up?
No, we're not looking at any citizens in the audience.
I think we'll be okay on that one. But I'm going to send myself over.
So the other thing, for the good of the order, I'd just like to extend my thanks to the staff for hiring that contractor and picking the pavement. It is a wonderful journey to drive on. Thank you for the 140th to 832 North Midway pavement. So, a
ton of pavement.
Yeah.
Oh man, those bumps. Motorcycle or car was not fun.
I'm actually excited because there used to be a big crack on the white line. So you would not want to ride your bike. No, until Ron wants to ride your bike.
And Mike, so you said, so when APA?
Yeah, it's the Washington chapter of the American Association.
Olympia?
Yeah.
Conference. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Practice. Latest practices and so forth.
So is the whole staff able to attend?
Yes.
Man, you guys got a good director.
Yeah.
Must have budgeted for
that. We're actually asking for more next year.
Okay, look for a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thanks, everyone.